When I went to work at Microsoft in open source, Microsoft was fully evil, right? Everyone hated Microsoft, right? Because they're going to destroy you and they're going to destroy everything that you love. But now, the reason I went there was for open source. I went there to opensource.net because I think that a business can be an open source business and still make money. So we'll talk about how Microsoft plans to do that and why we would open source.net in the first place. But a little bit of historical context. Now, when I look around here, I'm guessing there's a lot of people under 30, if I may, respectfully. I'm not, you know, there's varying ages, but I started doing .NET in like 2001, yeah, when you were born. this is a great article that was written, and I'm going to actually come up with a way to zoom in for you all because the slide over there is kind of weird. Let's do it like this. And then we'll do it like this. Microsoft plans shared source .NET. Notice the date, 2001. Did you know that we tried to open source .NET multiple times to make it open source? We actually open sourced it in 2001, but we did it with a thing called shared source. This was dumb. This was a stupid thing to do. We basically gave the source code to universities, but the web cloud thing. Makes sense, right? But we're designing ASP.NET 5 up there. Yeah, you know, totally new ASP.NET. But .NET is in a totally different group. So it was a little weird. Like, how does the thing that sits on top of .NET reimagine and architect the thing that underneath it? Organizationally, it didn't make sense. So there was a reorg and some people retired, and it was kind of a Game of Thrones .NET kind of thing. And then when it all ended, Julia owned Visual Studio, and Guthrie owns everything. And then Scott Hunter owns .NET and ASP.NET. So we moved away from Azure, and we are in developer tools now. So ASP.NET team, .NET team, same team. So that's cool. But ASP.NET 5 was going to be cross-platform, and 5 didn't make any sense. Because 5 implies that it's better, it's bigger, and it does everything that 4 did, and more, because it's a bigger number. In fact, this was going to be a smaller, tighter ASP.NET. It was going to be paired to its core. So we backed up, and we turned left, and we went in another direction. So there's ASP.NET 4.6 and 4.7 and whatever that runs on Windows, and there's ASP.NET Core and .NET Core, which is underneath it. So let's look at what that looks like with some slides. And we bought Xamarin. Okay. So, Windows applications, WinForms, WPF, UWP, that runs on the .NET framework. That's the one that everyone knows how to use. Cross-platform services, that's .NET Core. Cross-platform services, that's like APIs and things that go in Docker, and it runs cross-platform, so it goes on Linux. Mobile applications, that's Xamarin. And you've heard of Mono. Now remember what Mono was. You've heard of Mono? Mono was an open source .NET. But the way that it was written is it was written by not looking at the code for .NET. Using the menu and restaurant example, it would be like stealing the menu but not knowing what's going on in the kitchen. And then making an entirely new restaurant based on that menu, but the kitchen's completely different. They took the API surface, the functions, and they made an all new .NET. But I've never seen their string.length. It might be the same, might not, right? It could be a different thing. So there's subtle bugs when you use Mono because it is underneath different. But now that we own Mono and they are our friends and our coworkers, they can take Mono and refactor via subtraction. That they can pull out the stuff that they don't need and they can bring in our stuff because it's now open source. So to be clear, .NET framework, and I always like to say, full framework in like secret parentheses or secret quotes, .NET Core and Xamarin. That's .NET. Now here's where it gets interesting from a learning perspective. What do I learn? What do I, like this is too much. What do I want to learn? Learn the language. Learn C#, learn VB, learn F#, learn one of those languages. And I'm going to talk about something that we're going to do that's going to turn you all into better .NET developers. So when someone learns .NET, they will automatically become an iPhone developer. you automatically become a WinForms developer or an ASP.NET developer if you know that fundamental library. So here's what we're going to do. There's a thing called the .NET Standard Library. The issue right now with cross-platform .NET is we use a thing called portable class libraries. Do you know what portable class libraries are? Right? It's the lowest common denominator. They're the smallest libraries. And they're so small, they're basically useless because they have to be the common functionality that's shared. It usually ends up just being data structures. And what happens is a WinForms developer learns WinForms, learns the .NET framework, and then you identify yourself as a WinForms developer. You may not even realize it, but in your mind, you're like, oh, I do WinForms. And then someone says, come and do Xamarin. And you start looking for convenient functions. But we're going to improve these things. So like WinForms or WebForms, there's opportunity. When WebForms was created, for example, Angular didn't exist. It'd be really cool if we could make Angular libraries to work in ASP.NET, right? You know? There's APIs for Windows 10 that could be in WinForms, and you could make your WinForms app light up in Windows 10, those kinds of things. Making those things easier may not be an entirely new version of WinForms, but we recognize that like a large percentage of people are making WinForms app. When they go file a new project, they hit Windows app. WinForms is great. That's a difference, though, between brand new innovative stuff happening in WinForms all the time versus incremental improvements. But there are teams that work on this. In fact, the guy who owns ASP.NET WebForms works for me, and he's coming up with new ideas to make it better. Now, ASP.NET 4.6 exists, runs just fine, and works today. MVC and Web API are separate things in that world. We've unified them. So Web APIs and MVC are all the same thing. So ASP.NET Core 1.0, it's kind of like .NET on Rails. That is available and is on 4.6. Now here's where it gets interesting. And I want to make sure you're clear about this. This is a little confusing, so for the folks over here on the left, notice how ASP.NET Core 1.0 straddles two worlds. This is the number one point of confusion. You don't need to move off Windows to use the new stuff. If you don't want Linux and Mac and stuff, you don't want Docker, then don't worry about it. Keep using the .NET full framework and use ASP.NET Core 1.0. The confusion, the problem, is that we named ASP.NET Core 1.0 the same as .NET Core 1.0, so people think they're attached. In fact, you can target either one because of the .NET standard. So looking at it like this, that's the picture that you take a photograph of and you show your boss and you say, oh, okay, I can target multiple frameworks. You can even run ASP.NET on Mono. It's not supported, but you could potentially do that. Right? I've seen it running on like Raspberry Pis and stuff. This also brings up an interesting point of the difference between supported and possible. When you do open source stuff on PHP, you run it all over the place. You can run it on a Raspberry Pi. Who do you call for help? Who's the PHP company that saves you and you call tech support? Who's PHP tech support? I don't think there is anybody, is there? Your friend. This isn't, you guys aren't usually vegetarian here, right? Not a lot of vegetarian? Because I'm going to use a steak-related analogy, and I don't want to offend any vegetarians. Is that okay? Okay, how do you like your steak? Well done. If you get well done, that is Visual Studio. Well done steak never killed anybody. It never tasted good, but it never killed anybody. Well done means that you get your libraries from NuGet, you get your stuff from Visual Studio. Either you bought Visual Studio or you use Visual Studio Community. You call support, help, this is all screwed up. What are you using, NuGet and Visual Studio? Yes, support, cool. Medium well, tastes better, more interesting. Betas, CTP, Community Technology Preview. If these things have a go-live license, meaning you can go live into production, you can put it into production, you can call support, and you can say we have found a security problem or whatever, and it's a real thing and we'll support you. If you die when you eat my medium well steak, I will feel very badly because I cooked it medium well. But if you start getting to things like medium, where you can see the pink, this is going and getting continuous integration drops or maybe getting like daily builds of .NET. hey, we have our whole company in production, and we're using a daily build we got on Tuesday, and it's broken. We're not going to support you. You ate a pink steak. You knew the steak was not cooked, and you died. I'm sorry. Don't do that. If you built .NET from source code, like you like Git, you got it from Git or downloaded a zip file and you put it into production and it broke, I'm sorry, like that sucks, I feel bad. But this isn't a bad thing. This isn't me saying we don't care about you. We want to enable you to both go to production and be reliably supported, but also do crazy cool stuff. Raspberry Pi is an example. Right now, today, it's not supported to run ASP.NET on a Raspberry Pi. So for example, if you decided to open a new IoT business and you based it all on Raspberry Pi and you went live in production with ASP.NET Core and Raspberry Pi, we're probably not going to support you because it's not a supported thing. We will applaud you. I will tell everyone how awesome you are. That was amazing that you did that. But you have to understand, you're not going to get any support like if you put PHP on a Raspberry Pi, right? You're going to go to Stack Overflow. So you don't get to complain when you're eating bloody meat and getting sick. Now, speaking of bloody meat, I just discovered that there's something before rare. Did you know that? It's called blue. Australians, they do this. Like they just kind of like slap the cow around and they just send it out. It's a real thing. I'm serious. It's like it's warm and a good doctor could bring it back. That's... If you do that, then yeah, you've got a problem. Now, that one says build. It says build from source or third-party forks. Third-party forks. What is that? Let's say that this gentleman gets .NET, copies it, changes everywhere that says Microsoft to his name. What is your name, sir?
Brian.
So he makes Brian.NET. Starts selling it all over town. Yeah, it's the best. Brian.NET's got new improvements and stuff like that. That's fine. He can do that because it's open source. But are you going to get support when you call Microsoft and you're like, Brian.NET is the best. We're using it in production. No, you won't. That's blue meat. Can't do that. You understand? But we want to encourage you to be able to do that. If you want to change the compiler, change the framework, mix it up, that's great. But be aware that the farther away that you get from supported software, the more you are on your own. So this is a balance between a truly open source world and the more boring, wait 2 years and use the new software then. So let's look at it like a timeline here. This is the way we're going to solve this. There are two lines here, and I'm sorry. It says current, and then it says LTS, long-term support. Anyone run Ubuntu? Same thing, right? Ubuntu comes out with a new version every 6 months. One of them has crazy cool stuff. One of them is supported. And everyone knows that. So what we're doing is we have a branch of .NET called Current. That's where all the work is happening, and those are the versions we release that have good stuff in them that you can try out. And that's cool. You can do that, but it's going to change. Current is going to be changing. Let's say you go live on .NET, 1.1.3 or whatever version is the current version. You don't get to be mad when a new version comes out next month. Okay? What you can do, though, is you can be developing on current, and when you go to production, we're going to pick the most stable builds of current, just like Ubuntu does, and we're going to say that one is the long-term support. And we're going to go and we're going to support that for 3 years. So I think right now the long-term support version of .NET Core is 1.03. So when it feels baked and it's well done, we will support it for 3 years, and that gives you the opportunity to go slowly. This idea of going slowly is really important because it's a new Microsoft, it's a new .NET, and like I said, I went there to open source everything, and the team and all the great people who are open sourcing stuff want to build the best software that we can, but we're going really fast, and it's stressing people out. It's stressing you out because you feel like you can't keep up, and it's stressing your bosses out because they don't know what version to use. This is a way of solving that, right? Picking a version, like Python right now, there's 2.7 and 3.0. There's lots of people who are live on 2.7. It's been like that for years and years and years. You know what you're going to get when you get that reliable version. The cool part is that you can run both versions simultaneously, and I'll show you a demo of that in a few minutes. So Why did we do .NET Core? Cross-platform, runs on Mac, Linux, like 12 flavors of Linux. It's fast. We're seeing right now 8 times faster than Node.js. .NET Core is really fast. And it's also very lightweight. Are there any people who are doing .NET right now who have been afraid to upgrade because they didn't want to mess up an existing application? This is a really common scenario, yeah. So she's raising her hand. Let's say, for example, that she wants to run the latest .NET, 4.6.2. She wrote a great application for expense reporting on 4.6.2. It runs on her machine. Then she goes to you, and you manage the computer, and you have an app that runs on .NET 4.0. And it runs just great, like my blog. It's old, and it works fine. She says, hey, can we upgrade the server to 4.6.2? My app is going to be awesome. And you're like, I'm afraid of that. Like, I'm sure it'll be fine, but until it's totally not fine, right? That's how it is, right? It's 99% compatible until it's not, and then it's completely incompatible, right? So what happens is she gets frustrated. She wants to use the new stuff. He doesn't want to change. Time goes by. She quits, becomes a Node developer, and then you're like me, and you're on .NET, you know, old version. Why is that? Why have we become afraid of the .NET framework? It's because those minor changes are 99% compatible, but all you do is you hear one story from a friend, oh, it broke my application in production, and then you're afraid of it. What you really want is the ability to take her own personal version of the .NET framework and put it on the server side by side with his, so she can use current and be updating the latest stuff while he has a reliable, stable thing, and they can both work at the same company and everyone's happy. This is a really common scenario that we hear a lot. So let's talk about that for a second here. If I go down to C:\Windows\Microsoft.net, this is where .NET is located on your hard drive. C:\Windows\Microsoft.framework.net. Okay, here we go. Look at that. That's all the different versions of .NET, but it's under the Windows folder. So it's system-wide, right? And it involves a reboot. And those are all those kinds of reasons that make I'm just using you as the example of someone who doesn't want to upgrade, right? The new version of .NET Core is located elsewhere. It is located in programfiles.net. And if you look in here, not only do I have the release candidate, but I've got a bunch of previews and daily builds of .NET sitting in there as well, all right? I type .NET-version, so I can go and do .NET-version, and it says 4530. Now, I'm going to go over to here, and I'm going to accidentally delete this folder. Oops. As administrator. Okay. Then, I'm going to go back over here, and I'm going to type .NET-version again. I just uninstalled a version of .NET, and I typed .NET. Oh, you're a star, thank you. I just changed the version of .NET. I just typed .NET, and the version changed. Now I'm going to accidentally right-click restore, and we're back to that newer version. So if I type .NET, I get this like .NET command line. If I type where.net, and I like doing this because I feel the young people don't learn DOS enough. Seriously, I've seen you all. You don't use DOS, Linux, command line, whatever. I respect you for using the command line. But I see people using their mouses like, you know, like this. And it's like, what's happening in your brain as like... You can just use a hotkey, you know? But then with the young people, except for the Linux guy, then every once in a while I'll push like F7, and they'll be like, whoa, what's that? Is that Windows 10? That's amazing. Is that new? I'm like, no, that's DOS 4. That has been there since 1985. But I will tell you it's actually brand new in Windows 10. Actually, another cool thing, speaking of command line people, you can go Alt, Enter, and you can go 4-finger swipe. Which is cool, because I've actually seen people buy a Macintosh just to go like that. Like they've changed their entire operating system just so they can, look at that, I have a virtual machine and text mode. And yeah, now you don't have to. So you can just buy a Surface Book. Okay, I'm going to type .NET new. And the very first time I run that, it's going to load up this cache. This only happens one time, and it tells you a bunch of legal stuff. Blah, blah, blah. This is a cache of NuGet libraries that are going to be used. And hopefully, I didn't clear my cache, and we'll be using the wonderful hotel internet here. But next time I go .NET new, it would happen like that. Oh, computer. Sometimes I have a monitor just dedicated to Task Manager. Because just a whole monitor just to tell me what the heck's going on. And I say, it's my disk. What's happening to my disk right now? Search indexing. Oh, here you go. All right. So I'm going to type .NET restore. Oh, let me show you what's in the folder there. Program.cs. .NET restore. This is like npm install or gems. .NET run. And then this is going to go and run my hello world, and it'll be a little slow for the first time, and it says hello world. Okay, now let's open that up in Notepad, program.cs, and let's change, we'll say console.readline. That way it's going to stick around a little bit, right? It'll wait for me to push enter. So I'm just changing the application so it'll run and then stop. Then we can ask questions about it, okay? Close Notepad, .NET run. Notice that I didn't have to compile anything, and I'm not even running like Visual Studio, I'm just using Notepad, right? Now it's paused there, waiting for me to push enter, okay? So we'll take .NET run, and now we'll go over to Task Manager, and we'll look for .NET. There it is. And there's two of them. Why? Well, Task Manager sucks, so we'll close that. And we will use Process Explorer, which is what real programmers use. And I only say that because it's what I use. I actually don't know what real programmers use. Where's .NET? There it is. Zoom, 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 zoom. Look at one of the .NETs launched another one. This .NET came from programfiles.net, and it doesn't have a specific version there, does it? It doesn't say anything about the version. When we type .NET, it's going to pick the latest version. We saw that when I deleted that folder, and then it picked up the latest version. So you can have multiple versions of the .NET Core framework on your machine. Different folders can have different preferred versions. So your project would be one. Hers would be another. And when you're in that folder and you type .NET, you get your version. This is installed at the program files level. But what if you wanted, let's say that she wants to take it and put it on a USB key. She wants to publish it to a USB key, and he doesn't even have that version. That's called a self-contained .NET framework application. So then she can go and compile her own custom everything, custom compiler, custom .NET. She can change ASP.NET, have it in its own folder, and then just copy that folder over and doesn't even need a program files installation of .NET. That's really convenient, especially if you're going to use like a shared host or someone who doesn't have .NET on their machine at all. If I had more time, I could actually publish this Hello World application for Macintosh from my Windows machine. Put it on a USB key, and then grab one of your Macs, plug the key in, and it would run. That's a self-contained application. So you can have these .NET applications installed system-wide or user-level like that. Now I can go out, and let's go and change Kenya. We'll say Kenya Web, and I'm going to say .NET new -t for type. Web, and now I've got an ASP.NET web application. I say .NET restore to go and get the libraries that I want for this particular application, and then I will say .NET run, and it's going to fire this application up, and it says localhost 5000. So let's go over to Chrome and go and say localhost 5000. While I'm doing that, see? this application here is being hosted by that thing at the command line. Don't even have IIS involved. This means that you can choose your own web server as well. So if you're an Apache shop and you're using Apache or Nginx or another web server, you can then put this behind it. And you could potentially run in your company Apache or Nginx or whatever, talking to .NET Core on one port and PHP on another. Your applications could have slash admin could be the .NET application and the main shopping cart could be PHP. You can mix and match. And again, all this stuff runs everywhere. If you go in your browser to this URL that I paid lots of money for, .NET. I didn't really pay that much money. They didn't really know what they had. I'm like, they had a great URL. Anyway, it's kind of weird though because you click it and then it redirects you to Microsoft and it says /net. I'm like, it couldn't be like .NET? So anyway, I still like saying .NET. If you go here for new people, check this out. You can come down right on the same page in your browser and you can write code and then hit run and we will compile it in the cloud. So you can do this on your iPad or your tablet and you can learn C#. You go and click, go to the full tutorial, and we actually have like a 20 plus lessons of how to learn .NET without even installing .NET Core. And then when you go and finally do decide to install it, you can go and say, I want .NET Core, and you're gonna get this dial, you're gonna get this this page here that looks a lot like that slide. .NET Framework, .NET Core, and Xamarin, right? You can go and do that. Now, to the original questions, and I'll answer questions as we get ready to leave here. Things like WinForms. A WinForms developer or someone who's been around for a while who's doing that kind of work, if you learn .NET Standard and you know that API surface, and you factor your application so that your business logic is outside of your app as a library, a WinForms developer could have a great Windows app with a database layer, and they could reuse that database layer with a web app and even make an API. You can go and take those libraries and use them in web APIs, in Xamarin applications, in iPhone, or in Android applications. Okay? So that is my time, and the young ladies in the back are holding up signs, and they're going to try to kick me out. You can go and learn about all this stuff at .NET, and then I also want to just let you know and remind you that I have a podcast called Hansel Minutes. It is something that I'm very proud of, and it has lots of really interesting and cool people talking about lots of cool technology.